You're listening to a special edition of KRCU's Going Public, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. In honor of Veterans Day, we're sharing the stories of local service members from all the major wars and conflicts. We continue our series, We Came Home, with a story from Gulf War veteran Captain Diane Howard. She's a lawyer who served in the Navy JAG Corps just shy of 25 years. This is her story.
I was in college, and then I was in law school. And I got out of law school in 1979, and not long after I got out of law school, my husband joined the Navy. And I found myself in Virginia, licensed attorney, and was ready to go to work. And I had suggested to me that I might look at joining the Navy, which is something I had never thought of doing. And one probably who knew me prior to my joining the Navy would have never thought I would do. But I talked to a recruiter. I drove from Norfolk to Richmond and talked to an officer recruiter. And I thought it might be something interesting to do. I'm not sure even after I did the application process that I would have accepted it if I was offered the opportunity. But I was offered the opportunity. I was given 24 hours to either accept it or reject it because they were hard jobs to get, and they had a waiting list of people wanting the opportunity to be in the Navy JAG. And when I was offered it, it was an intriguing idea, and my husband and I gave it quick thought and decided to take it. I had a one-year-old son. And you are not able to take a child with you when we all know, see the pictures of when you go off to officer training and you live in a barracks and with the other candidates. So my sister, who lived here in Cape Girardeau at the time, took my son. My husband was overseas with his ship at the time. And so he wasn't in any position to take our son. A lot of people said to me they couldn't believe I was leaving our son and leaving my husband for 5 months and going to my training. And I would tell people that fathers and husbands have been doing that forever, and no one ever criticized them, but they criticized me because I was a wife and mother. I was assigned to the personnel mobilization team during Desert Storm, and so I had the privilege. The personnel mobilization team did exactly what its name indicates. It was a reserve unit whose responsibilities were to mobilize troops, Navy units. And it consisted of personnel and administrative individuals that did the paperwork, and then two lawyers, two doctors, and a clergy personnel, a chaplain, who would be a rabbi, could be a priest, might be a minister of some sect. The chaplain did counseling. The lawyer took care of legal matters and administrative matters, and the physicians did physicals. And we assisted. We were responsible for mobilizing individuals, reservists, who sometimes received only 2 or 3 days' notice that they were being pulled out of their civilian life and sent off to Desert Storm. When I was on active duty, everyone had things that they did and things that they didn't do, and I tried predominantly drug cases, drug distribution cases is, unfortunately, in the military world, just like the civilian world, there are issues with drugs. Norfolk is a large military community, well over 100,000 military personnel in the Norfolk area, and there were issues with drug distributions and attempts to distribute drugs in that area by military personnel. I was always a JAG. There is a reservist JAG, and there is an active duty JAG. So there is the Judge Advocate General of the Navy. And so we are in the JAG Corps, which means we are the JAG's Corps. We are the person who works for the JAG. So the Judge Advocate General is the head Navy lawyer, and we are the subordinate lawyers that work for the JAG. There was one woman who had been at the legal service office ahead of me, and she was already gone. I said the legal service office in Norfolk, which was a large office. There were almost 100 of us at that office. It was a very large office, almost 100 lawyers at that office. And she had been there before I arrived in 1981, and people were, you know, still talking about her. She'd been there just the year before, I think, in 1980. She'd left the year before in 1980. And so people were still talking about it. You know, we had a woman lawyer here out of 100 people. You know, I mean, that was such a huge deal. And she'd been the only one there. But when I arrived at Norfolk, which was the biggest office, by then, you know, there were probably eight of us or so out of the 100, you know, by then, you know, we were starting to trickle in, not by droves by any means, but, you know, by then there were probably about eight of us out of the 100 when I arrived in 1981. But most did not stay beyond their initial commitment and rise to the senior ranks. Getting to the senior ranks was difficult. When I went to a senior officer conference sometime, you know, probably in the early 90s, there were about 80 of us at a senior officer conference, and still there were only two women. My good friend Christy Kristen and I were the only two women, and the rest were all men. So, you know, women were coming in, but they would stay for, you know, 4 years or 8 years and not persevere to try to move up the ranks. You know, that glass ceiling was still definitely still there. You know, we would hear that. Well, we liked it better the way it used to be when, you know, it was just always us and we could... you know, we could go out to dinner and it was just us guys, and we could go out after dinner and it was just us guys, and we could go places and we could just talk guy stuff, and we're just not comfortable now, and it's just different when it's not just us guys. Well, it is different. That's right, it is different. At one point, it's going to be 78 of you guys and just two of us, but next year... there's going to be six. And in the early 2000s, I went to the same conference in New Orleans, I remember, and I looked around, and it was incredible. I mean, there were so many women there. It was amazing. And I thought, oh my gosh, look how things have changed in 10 years. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, you couldn't count the women when I looked around. There's no way. And I thought 10 years ago, I could count them on one hand. Now there's no way I could count them. And were I to say to those women there, you know, they wouldn't even want to hear me. I mean, they'd say, oh, gosh, now I'm going to hear one of these stories again from Diane. 1992, Christy Kristen and I were... at this conference, and there were only two women. I mean, the women don't even want—they don't even want to hear that because they can't even imagine that. You know, so recently, that's how it was. My life has been easy. My life has really been easy. You know, when people say thank you to me, it almost takes me aback because I have never suffered. I'm not saying I've never sacrificed as far as inconveniences of time away from my law office or time away from my family, but that's nothing in comparison to the sacrifices of people who have gone overseas. And most people here in Cape Girardeau or in the surrounding area are not aware of, especially the lives of our reservists. Most military people in the United States today are citizen airmen, citizen soldiers, citizen Marines, citizen sailors. They are living a regular life and then are interrupted from their life to serve, which is an extreme hardship. And most people do not recognize that. And without the service of our Guard, National Guard, and our reservist, our military couldn't function. And that is not recognized.